Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Joe Zimmel and Valerie Friedman.
Faith here with your welcome toast. If you've lost your appetite, I think I have it.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry. I keep running into people who say to me, Chris, they say, sometimes it just makes me too hungry. So I just want to say, you know, maybe you should have a snack before the show starts.
Get and, pretzels ready.
You know, it does the same to us, too. You know, it makes us excited. We try and defer that energy and cook something or go out and eat something. I get it. Listen, we're going to celebrate cultures on this show. My treasured food buddies are here. Senior contributor Chris Prosperi and Robin Doyen Aiken is also senior producer of the show. We just celebrated, Chris and Robin, Persian-Iranian New Year, and I would invite you to find a good Persian cook, home cook, or the best, or a restaurant. It is gorgeous food. I like to celebrate holidays from different cultures, and because it gets me to try new things. You find once I was roaming around in Boston, and someone said to me, "Okay, well, let's eat at this Burmese restaurant." The food was so hot, but I knew that if I had asked for it a different way, I would have loved the spice mixture in that culture. Mm-hmm. We can go to Afghani restaurants right now. Certainly, Chinese, French, Italian. You know,
South African, North African, Egyptian.
Do you remember?
I mean, just all that stuff.
One time in New Haven, I was driving down the road. I've probably said this on the show before. Yeah. Forgive me, but driving right down the main street, and there was a sign that had popped up on it's the main street in New Haven is Chapel. All kinds of restaurants, stores, everything down there. Yale University. And the sign pops up and it says, Polish Indian Cuisine. I know. I just can't stand it that I didn't go in there. There was a place in Wallingford that specialized in Mexican Italian.
Well, Mexican Italian.
Yes.
I mean, I can kind of see, but Polish Indian, I can't.
Well, when you think
I
about
wish I had gone.
What, you know, pierogies with a kind of curry sauce is what I'm thinking in my head. I don't know. Okay. I have no idea.
Yep,
okay, so try some things.
Especially when you're in the cities, right? Like New Haven, Hartford. Hartford has great little Jamaican restaurants, right?
Really?
And it just gets you out of the norm. And maybe you're heading to an Italian restaurant because it's a normal thing and it's a restaurant you go to. Just take a left turn and go try something new. There's
West Haven, Connecticut, Afghanistan.
Sure.
Spain over in East Haven, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. You know, this just goes
Puerto Rican in the Hartford area, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
And falafel in Waterbury.
Yeah, falafels in Waterbury.
Right.
Sure.
All right, back to Persian for a second. Iranian food. I have friends who are Persian-Iranian, and I've eaten at their homes, and there is, if you find a good Persian restaurant, there is a crispy rice dish. It's a classic thing. It takes a long time to make. It is so delicious. Mm-hmm. So try that among many other things. We're going to tell you about how to make a special thing in Rhode Island that goes with some Easter food, because Easter is on the way. We've got a special matzah thing coming
Passover
your way.
Right around the corner.
Passover coming. So here we go. For ham, Chris and Robin, one of my favorite things is to take a jar of peach preserves or peach jam that I buy. I don't make it myself. Yeah. And then coat the ham on the outside and put in some cloves, stud it with a few cloves, and bake it in the oven. Of course, it really crisps up on the outside because of the sugar in the jam, but that peach flavor is really something. Do you ever have ham?
I'm a foil guy. Do you foil? I'm a foil guy.
No, I don't.
All right, so what I mean when I'm a foil guy, I take my ham and I glaze it, right? And
with
I change, like, I like a mustard. because I like that kind of spiciness. Yeah. So I'll do a like Dijon and whole grain mustard. I'll mix in a little bourbon and then just sort of glaze it. And then I like make an envelope with the foil and I sort of make a package and I put that in the roasting
pan. Do you leave
pan.
A little space around
no,
the
I
ham
get
or
right,
right up
yeah,
against?
Yeah, right in a nice and tight and I bake it in that foil pouch.
What does that do?
It keeps all the moisture in, all the juices in. It doesn't dry out. And then for, I don't know, the last 15 minutes, I'll pop it open. I'll crank my oven and I'll get the glaze to like get crispy.
Yeah. That
but I just like
good.
I don't know. I just like it because when you cook it in the foil, it does cook a little faster, but it also keeps all that juices inside.
I like that. And now you're making me want to put just a little bourbon in my peach jam.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't that be good?
Only going to make it better.
I know. Really, seriously. And if you can't have alcohol, go just with the peach jam. Or if you don't want to have alcohol, I should say. Robin, are you a ham?
We're more traditional, you know, brown sugar glaze. I try to keep the ham really simple because I know that I'm going to have that all week. So if we start off with something really simple and basic, I can use it to do a bunch of different things later and not worry about a certain flavor in there.
Now, we're going to try to bring you a little something about what to do with that leftover ham, and it includes a ham carbonara on pasta. Just think of it in your mind and create that. Just pretend that the bacon that you would have in a traditional carbonara, look up a recipe, substitute the ham. Oh, go ahead,
but before we move off ham, we have to note that you can get like one of the best hams in the world here in Connecticut, and that's Nodine's.
Mm-hmm. In Goshen.
In Goshen, Connecticut, where I'm from, where I spent most of my summers as a kid.
And why is it among the best?
I agree. It is just the perfect amount of salt and smoky and sweet. Not too sweet, not too salty. That's where you get your ham this year.
You little devil.
No, I'm telling you, the ham is so good.
Yeah.
And get a half pound of beef jerky while you're there. Because
you know what?
Best.
While you're there, get a half pound of everything because I love a road trip to that place. I suddenly say, I'd like some smoked turkey and give me some smoked ham and smoked cheese. And suddenly I've got a whole giant thing going on. Okay, when you were growing up, I don't know if your parents did ham. Chris, your mother was Austrian, your father French.
Easter.
My mother, Scottish. Yep. I don't know where she got this, whether it was reading 50s magazines or what, because this isn't Scottish. Yep. But she would take a ham and pour a bottle of Coke over it and then stud it all over with cloves. And into the oven it would go. It would get this caramelized thing from the Coke. And it was delicious.
It's a classic American. And down south in the Dallas and Texas area, it was Dr. Pepper. Same recipe you're talking about.
So, you know, it's
but
all
Dr.
the sugar.
Pepper.
It's the sugar
and the
vehicle.
Caramel. Because
you could probably put ginger ale on it.
And it's got that caramel already in there, right? So that makes it just so much better.
Robin, you grew up with ham?
We did, but it's the same one that I make. With just the brown sugar.
See how we revert to tradition.
And sometimes pineapple. That might be a 50s magazine.
You're supposed to, right?
With cherries. Right? You have to stick them.
How many magazine pictures has that been in, right? The studded with
the
pineapple.
I remember Gourmet. I think Gourmet even did that.
Every magazine on earth had that at one time.
And if you come upon those old copies, the color is all kind of crazy. You know, it looks like something
Technicolor.
Kind of Technicolor. Well, in my world, if you're having ham, and you know, we shouldn't overlook lamb because spring lamb, it's a huge thing. But to come back to ham, in my world, if you're having ham, you need two other things. You need fresh asparagus, which is coming to us very shortly. And do you remember, can we put this up? The brown butter easy blender hollandaise to put on that asparagus.
I forgot about that. That would be perfect for the holidays.
And even if you don't do the brown butter version, which takes a minute to just brown the butter, but if you don't want to do that and it freaks you out, just use our recipe for
the blender hollandaise.
And I think, Chris, this was
so
your
simple.
Recipe.
Yes, so simple.
No, you cannot fail with this thing. Nope. It is so delicious.
Blender does all the work for you.
Okay. So that's at foodschmooze.org. And if you ask me, because I said two things besides the asparagus.
Yeah, what's the other one?
The other thing is that, and I think it is the best thing on the table, better than the ham, better than anything else, biscuits.
You want to have biscuits
with your ham.
Soak
right?
up all that juice.
Oh, it's just so good. Butter on them.
Flaky.
Oh, There's so many recipes for biscuits, so we're not going to presume to tell you what to do. But there are some super easy biscuit recipes out there and super complicated ones. But I'd say if you're not used to making biscuits, do the easy way. You could go to the supermarket.
I'm going to say that. You know what?
Get your Poppin' Fresh.
We had the I can't remember. Whatever the last holidays, one of my servers brought in one of the tubes.
Yeah.
Right?
Crescent rolls or
no,
what?
It was the biscuits. You know, they and I haven't seen them in years. I totally forgot what they were. And you sort of – so you twist it a little and it sort of pops open.
Yep.
And then they sort of break apart and you just put them on a cookie sheet and you throw them in the oven.
But can I just add a quick thing here? Really, one thing you want to do is just brush them, the tops, with a little melted butter.
We did.
You did?
We did, and a little sea salt on top because
–
now, these were not – we weren't selling these. We were just – he brought in a tube, and he's like, could you bake these for us? It's a long shift. It's a holiday. I'm like, sure, I guess. And I tell you what, they were gone in a second, and everyone
– Did they taste chemical-like?
I don't know what it was. I can't explain what it was, but they were simple.
Good.
They were easy.
Taste of childhood.
They were in a blink. They were gone, and everyone, a whole staff, loved them. So who's to say, right?
And can I invite you to look up a recipe for cream biscuits?
Cream biscuits.
These are the easiest biscuits in the world. If you are a non-biscuit maker, the easiest in the world. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's three ingredients.
Nice.
You don't have to do anything. You don't have to.
I'm all about
just
that.
Fabulous.
Especially on the holidays. Enough work already.
Okay.
Yeah, plus you need to make a little ham sandwich after with a good mustard and your leftover biscuits.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Ham and mustard.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
it right
oh,
there,
that's
right?
Right. It's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's say you're gluten-free or you're just a nut about cornbread, as I am.
Ooh.
I would like to talk about a thing. And it's cultural because this is a Rhode Island thing, Johnny cakes.
Yeah.
So Johnny cakes are really corn cakes, except that in most traditional cornbread corn cake recipes, you would have white flour. This ends up, not by intention, but it ends up being gluten-free. All you need is a cast iron skillet and a bowl. And in that bowl, the trick to Johnny cakes in Rhode Island is they insist on white cornmeal. There are some heritage places there that grind white cornmeal.
White corn, yeah.
Okay, so let's say you've got white cornmeal. You put it in a bowl with just a teaspoon of sugar. So you've got a cup of this white cornmeal, a teaspoon of sugar, a little pinch of salt, and then slowly you add a cup of boiling water. I made these last night. And you stir as you're slowly adding the boiling water. You know what you've got? Like a pancake batter, like kind of thicker consistency batter. Then you take a cast iron skillet to make Johnny cakes. You put a little slick of bacon grease. So if you're making bacon, do not throw that away.
That's right.
Throw it in a container and toss it in the freezer. You know, or let it cool and scrape it up with a spoon while that is solid and put it in a plastic thing and throw it in the freezer. You just stick a spoonful in the bottom, just a slick in the bottom of that cast iron skillet and a spoonful. You get the skillet hot, a spoonful like you're making pancakes, and you wait for it to get golden crispy. So all that's in there is cornmeal and salt and oil.
And that's it.
And that is it. Golden crispy on one side. You got to watch it carefully
because
they turn
then they
fast.
Flip
them over, golden crispy on the other side, and then you just hold it in your hand and you eat it. You could eat it with a knife and fork with maple syrup. But if you are a cornbread nut the way I am, they are so
incredible.
That would
be so good with Easter. Right, with the ham
with
and the asparagus and the hollandaise. I'm in.
And if you're a gluten-free person, you know, we know there are just millions of people now who are developing these allergies to the gluten in wheat. Well, this is your way to go. And if you're driving through Rhode Island on the way to the Cape, you got to look it up. You got to get Johnny cakes.
Yeah. I like it.
You know, or make them at home yourself.
It's as easy as that. I've never,
that's
know what?
It.
I'm being honest. I've never made them.
Okay.
I've read about them. I've heard them. I've eaten them, but I've never made them.
A cup of boiling water.
Yeah.
A sprinkle of salt to your taste. I like a lot of salt.
Yeah.
That's just the way I am.
Yeah.
A teaspoon of sugar.
Yeah.
You just pour that cup of boiling water in slowly and stir.
And a fine ground cornmeal?
Well, the white cornmeal has a special grind to it.
Gotcha.
That's why they do it there.
Yeah, Johnny cake.
But what?
Use cornmeal.
I don't even worry about it. Okay, so
it's going to be good no matter what.
This is good. I mean, please, I hope this makes your Easter. You know, or you're going to make biscuits, whatever you're going to do. I'm doing the cornmeal. I'm doing the Johnny cake thing.
Yeah.
If you want to add a little bit more sugar, I guess you could do that too. It's up to you. All right. So we've got a lot of things. We're talking about celebrating the sort of holiday and cultural traditions that are all around us right now. You know, join with friends who are from other places and try their food. If you're lucky enough to get an invitation for a home-cooked meal, you are so lucky.
And that's how you try the new things, is because it's a holiday food and you're, you know, holidays are up for anything. It's the gateway into that culture.
I like that you're saying that, Robin. And if you want to spend a few days in Queens, the Queens section of New York, you can eat, yeah, this is where Chris was born.
Yeah.
You can eat around the world, and not only around the world,
borough.
But some of the best of around the world, the best street
best
food
Chinese,
on
best
the
Greek.
Planet. Right here in our region,
yeah.
Amazing food from around the world.
Yep.
Amazing.
Yeah, we were saying Jamaican and Hartford, Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Look for where the people from those places are eating, and you'll know you've got the good ones.
You know what we've got coming up? We have Leah Koenig, who has done a book called Modern Jewish Cooking. And I don't care what culture you are from, religion, whatever. There are some great recipes in here. We've got all kinds of stuff coming your way. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
We have a free podcast for you, meaning you'll never miss a drop of pleasure on this show. All you do is go to our site, you sign up for it once, and then we automatically send you the Food Schmooze every week. Foodschmooze.org, and you'll see podcast delivery. And you can also listen to our podcast on that site if you want to. I'm with my treasured food buddies. I just adore these people. Chris Brassberry, chef and co-owner of Metro Bistro Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, and wine broker Alex Province of Hartford. Here we go. When it comes to food and culture, everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day, Puerto Rican when the homemade coquito drink comes out in January, and everybody's Jewish on Passover or Rosh Hashanah. I start craving fork tender brisket, potato pancakes, the carrot simis. And sometimes on the show, we like to do a mashup of holidays. For Easter, instead of ham, we'll try Puerto Rican pork shoulder marinated in garlic, fresh citrus, and wine. Well, we're about to celebrate Passover, so we have what will no doubt be mouth-watering conversation with the author of Modern Jewish Cooking, The Classics or New Wave Jewish Cooking. Around here, we love tradition and we love what's new. We have the author of the book, Leah Koenig, and you probably have seen her name in so many of your most loved publications. She's an authority on Jewish cooking. Welcome to the Food Schmooze Party, Leah.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you here especially. We wanted to start with something that is so popular with so many people, Jewish, not Jewish, blintzes. And I love this take of yours, doing orange-scented cheese blintzes. Can I just run down the ingredients? You make a batter for the blintzes of either milk or almond milk, eggs, sugar, all-purpose flour, vanilla extract, and salt, and then that filling of ricotta. You can use low-fat or full-fat, confectioner's sugar, orange zest, a little bit of butter for frying. That's a part we love. Maybe some fresh berries on top, some sour cream. Tell us about this recipe.
Well, blintzes are one of my absolute favorite Eastern European-inspired Jewish dishes. You know, just for folks who aren't familiar, I basically think of them as a crepe that's filled with either, you can go savory with mashed potato, or you can kind of go sweet with fruit. And one of the more common ones is cheese-filled blintzes. So you're not thinking like fontina or cheddar. You're thinking more like a cottage cheese or farmer's cheese filling traditionally.
Now, why is that? Do you want the flavor to be neutral, or that's what was around?
Probably back in Eastern Europe, they used a lot of farmer's cheese, and that's what was available. And it also has, like you said, a really mild flavor that pairs really well when they're pan fried, and pairs also really well with fruit, like a fruit topping. So, you know, what I tried to do is take the traditional dish and update it for today's taste by adding some orange zest and some flavors that kind of brighten it and make it a little bit more contemporary.
Yeah, I love the orange zest touch in this. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Thanks.
And what we have here, I love this recipe in particular because, first, I love blintzes. Mm-hmm. And with a little bit of a slight crisp on the outside and then that yummy texture, that velvety inside. But we can see from other cultures that all of them blend together. So we have, in France, we have the orange peel hanging above the stove to put orange zest in so many stews. We have the Italian influence. You think about the communities in Italy that were Jewish Italian. There is so much intermixing of cultures here. And then a lot of Jews moved to the Lower East Side, right, Leah? And then it became a cheese that was available. If you couldn't get farmer's cheese from the Italian neighborhood, you got cottage cheese.
True, yeah. One of the things I love about Jewish cuisine in general is it's actually a very global cuisine. A lot of people think of it as being specifically Eastern European food, which is true to an extent because a lot of Jews, especially Jews who moved to America, have that background. But, you know, there's Jews all over the world, everywhere from China to Mexico to South Africa, and you know, they all have food traditions that go back, in many cases, thousands of years. So, you know, when you're talking about Jewish cuisine, it's really fun to kind of explore the global aspects of it.
There are things in these cultures, no matter what the culture is, that are really kind of shocking to the palate for other people outside the culture. I'm thinking about Marmite in England, you know, in Britain, where you just go, wow, what is that? And you have to get used to it. But if you grew up with it, there are other things that have stuck around so long because they're just good. And I think blintzes are one of those things, right, Leah?
I think so, too. I do want to say these particular blintzes are not, Passover is coming up, and they're not a Passover-friendly recipe, but they are following holiday after Passover. It's called Shavuot, and it's a very dairy-focused holiday for reasons we can talk about on another show. So it's actually a very good recipe for a springtime holiday that's coming up.
Good thought. Okay, let's go into something that is very well known as Passover arrives, and that is the matzo ball. There is so much, just like the meatball, there are family recipes, there are people who add this and that, one to make it lighter, another one who's doing a gourmet treatment, another one who does it because this is the way my family did it. And you have a parsley matzo ball recipe.
Yeah, you know, matzo balls are just one of those quintessential dishes or parts of a dish that you eat them, obviously, in chicken soup. That people get really sort of particular about. You know, you want it to taste just like your grandmother made it or your mother or father made it. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to kind of stray too far from the original classic, A, because it's delicious as it is, and B, because people sort of really want the tradition. So what I try to do with my matzo balls is to just tweak them just a tiny bit to add a little bit of freshness. So the one recipe that you mentioned, it's a basic matzo ball that just gets kind of amped up and brightened up with a shock of green parsley, which really isn't so crazy to do, because parsley is usually part of the soup. But I have another recipe in there for a jalapeno and shallot matzo ball.
Yeah.
That one's a little bit wilder.
I love it.
you know, it takes the traditional matzo ball and just infuses it with a little bit of spice and a little bit of that caramelized shallot flavor. So it sounds crazy, but it actually tastes well within the realm of tradition, but with just a little bit of a twist.
Love it. I was going to bring that up. These are on facing pages in the book, which is called Modern Jewish Cooking. The author is with us, Leah Koenig. You've probably seen her name. She writes about Jewish food an awful lot in a lot of publications that we like. Some of the recipes we've been talking about are on our website at foodschmooze.org. When you say modern Jewish cooking, when you say I'm updating or putting a spin, what's your philosophy about how to do that?
It's a good question, and I think it's a question that every generation of Jewish cooks kind of has to answer for themselves because, you know, how we eat is sort of always evolving. But for me, what it means is really having an eye to seasonal flavors and, you know, local and seasonal ingredients. And then also, as you were talking about earlier on the show, blending cultures within a cuisine. Jewish tradition has so many cultures contributing to the larger canon of the cuisine, but also just reaching outside of the Jewish world and saying, what's around us, you know, what's inspiring, and how can we play in a fun way with flavor? That to me is what modern means. It's new and interesting flavors and a sense of seasonality.
Well, we have here a Moroccan chicken with preserved lemons, and everyone here in this room, we are nuts about preserved lemons. And so this would be a dish for Moroccan Jews on Shabbos, right, and Yom Kippur?
Yeah, it would be definitely a dish that you would see on the Sabbath table. Preserved lemons are a hugely popular ingredient throughout North Africa and the Middle East. They found their way into Israeli cooking via those channels, and chicken is kind of the quintessential Shabbat dish. In Eastern European cuisine, you'd have a basic roast chicken, and this for me was a way of looking to the Moroccan and Moroccan Jewish tradition and saying, you know, how can we find new ways to do things that make them a little more interesting than what we've had growing up? And I'm talking about we, with my own background being Eastern European.
And we're fully aware on the show because we love both, no matter what the holiday, what the culture, we love tradition and we love what's new and how things change. And so we respect you if you say, I want to make it the way my family made it. That's important too, for memory, for whatever. And then we love people who are doing what Leah's doing, saying, how can I update this a little bit, put a twist in this that makes it a little more interesting?
Mm-hmm.
In the end, as long as it's good, as long as it's about memory. I will say, Leah, that when I went to France leading a food trip for our listeners, one of my guides, a Frenchman who has taught me so much about French wine, said to me, when I gave him the restaurant menus, he said, I think you should say to the chefs on the tour, we want you to cook what your mother made. And we did that. And he said, you will experience France in a way that nobody does anymore. So there's a great debate about things changing in all these cultures. No doubt some of the people doing the innovative things like Ferran Adrià in Spain, it's like fabulous and exciting and interesting. And then we have the traditionalists. So I love this interplay, the borrowing. Food's always changing, right, Leah?
Exactly. You know, I think that's the exact right point, is that tradition is wonderful and we can't forget it because it's the foundation of everything. But we'd be wrong to say that food is not ever evolving. Even what our mothers cooked, our grandmothers, our great-grandmothers cooked, they were influenced by the world around them. So to the extent that our world changes and we change, I think food is an honest reflection of who we are in a given time. I think tweaking and changing sounds maybe like an interesting thing to do, but it's actually just a very natural thing to do. So as long as you kind of have your heart in the right place of wanting to honor the past and honor the traditional, I think you have a very solid foundation to play.
Yeah. I like the idea of the latkes. Some people have applesauce with it, depending on where they're from, and some people have sour cream with it, right? And that just shows you one dish in the Jewish culture that from two different areas is done two different ways.
And then I go into a restaurant in New York, Latanzi, which specializes in Roman Jewish cooking. I learn all about, from that restaurant, the intersection of Jewish and Italian cuisine, and it's a whole other ball game, and it's fabulous. So
it is.
Is there Abu Danza?
In a way, there certainly is. Okay, so I think Italians and Jews certainly always afraid, and Scots. I'm Scotch. is always afraid that there is not enough on the table, you know. So, so you have a lasagna. You know, you'll find that a lot of the recipes in this book, Modern Jewish Cooking, are gluten-free. Spinach matzah lasagna. But go ahead.
Yes, spinach matzah lasagna is definitely not gluten-free unless you use a gluten-free matzah, but it is a twist on lasagna, which, you know, obviously everybody loves hot, cheesy casserole with noodles. How can you go wrong? But when you're talking about Passover, there's so many things you can't eat and so many things that you're sort of missing and craving that people have found ways to kind of make things that are reminiscent of some of those foods. So in the last maybe 10 or 15 years, matzah lasagna has come up as a very popular either weeknight dish or holiday post-Seder lunch dish,
yeah,
where you replace the noodles with softened matzah. And I have to tell you, I make this year-round because you actually can't tell. Like, you can tell that it's not noodles, but it is delicious.
Isn't it a cool idea?
So you just take the matzah and put it on as the layer.
Yeah. So let me ask, essentially these are the same things. We're talking about flour and water, sometimes egg. Why is matzah different in terms of its deliciousness from regular noodles?
You know, it's got a little bit of a lighter quality than the noodles. You know how when you eat lasagna and it's delicious, but you end up feeling like a little bit like you have a brick in your stomach?
Mm-hmm.
So this just lightens it up just enough so the cheese and the vegetables, the spinach and the sauce kind of shine through without the, you know, it's still obviously a carbohydrate base, but it's not quite such a heavy one. I just find that extra lightness to be a really nice touch.
We have this recipe on our website for the spinach matzah lasagna. And Leah Koenig, may I ask you, I'm someone who thinks a lot about the texture in my mouth, so I like that crispy thing going on somehow. Would it be okay if in the end I crumbled up a little matzah on the top so I had a little bit of crispy, crunchy stuff going on?
I don't know that I would do that, because the reason the matzah works so well in lasagna is because it soaks up the flavor. And if you had just plain matzah on top, I think it wouldn't have the right flavor. But what I would do is, you know how you can cook Parmesan on a baking sheet till it gets kind of crunchy? I might make a few Parmesan crunchy crumbles and crumble that.
Oh, now you're talking. That's much better than my idea.
Well, wait, what about cooking the matzah in chicken fat and then sprinkling it on top?
Oh, that's good.
Now you're talking.
Now you're talking our language.
Although, you know what? Honestly, you couldn't do that if you were serving a kosher meal, because there's cheese in the lasagna.
Right, that's right.
You can't mix cheese and meat. But if that's not a concern, then have at it.
Yeah, okay.
You could also fry up some shallots or fry up something kind of like crunchy onions.
Oh, yeah. Love that idea.
Now you've got my juices flowing.
We need to all go to the kitchen immediately. Let's go to the dessert category, because here is something that is, in fact, gluten-free, and that would be the chocolate almond meringues.
Mm-hmm.
I've never made meringue because I'm not a baker. I'm always afraid of baking. I'm going to ruin things. So really, it's egg whites and cream of tartar and confectioner's sugar and regular sugar, bittersweet baking chocolate, and roasted unsalted almonds that you chop up fine. So how hard is it to make the meringue?
You know, my mom made meringues every single Passover. So, you know, I grew up watching her make them, but never actually trying it. And so when I first tried it 5 or 6 years ago, I was a little nervous to make them, partly because she had made them so deliciously and how can you live up to that? But I was surprised at how not difficult it was. The real trick to meringues is you want to beat the egg whites. You want everything to be really cold, and you want to beat it until it has the right peaks to it so that it'll hold its shape when you bake it. But from there, you pipe it on the baking sheet, and you bake it at a really low temperature. So instead of cooking, it more dries out. It almost dehydrates. And you're left with this sort of crackly outside and very melty, chewy inside. So
like that contrast.
Yeah, meringues are really worth learning how to do. They're delicious.
I know.
I try to walk you through how to do it in the book.
When I go to a meal at Passover, I will offer to bring dessert, and so I'm out buying the meringues. So I have to see if I'm brave enough to do this. Recipes and the cookbook online at foodschmooze.org. Leah Koenig, great guest. Thank you so much for being with us, and I hope we talk to you again.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, her book, Modern Jewish Cooking. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers for on-demand podcast delivery of the Food Schmooze Party every week. And to find our food, wine, and cocktail recommendations, restaurants, hot topics, everything, videos, go to foodschmooze.org. We'll be right back. Let's do matzah. This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the east end of Long Island. That means, of course, the Hamptons. The senior producer of the show is Robin Doyon Aiken. To hear us on WNPR, the show airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. Of course, you can talk with us on Facebook, as everybody does. Search Faith Middleton, Food Schmooze. Okay, here's what we've got. I've been waiting for this. I want to say the words, Chris.
Go ahead.
Matzah nachos.
I love it.
Can you believe it? Our guest is David Kirchner. He is a Michelin-trained chef, spent many years running restaurants. He has his own private dining company right now, and he is the recipe creator behind this book called Matzah. 35 recipes for Passover and all year long. The author is Michelle Streit Heilbrunn. People who are into matzah will know that name. Okay, David, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Thank you, Faith. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. So right away, I want to get to matzah nachos. And this is with pickled jalapenos. What a great idea this is.
We really wanted to figure out ways of incorporating matzah into foods that we love on an everyday basis. So when Mikey and myself first sat down and did our recipe grid for the book, we basically just started listing all of these amazing, fun, everyday bites that we love, and then we're kind of working backwards to reverse engineer matzah into them.
What I'm wondering about, if I were creating this, the worry would be, are matzahs going to get mushy once the liquid of anything goes on them? And so how do you prevent that from happening?
The big trick we found was deep frying the matzah before you started.
Ooh, see?
Just like you would a tortilla.
This is called the setup in broadcasting. So yeah, I was just dying to get you to talk about that. So what we've got is deep fried matzah, and I know you have fallen hard for that. And so what happens is they get crunchy and crispy, and now, of course, nachos. That makes sense. So let's your ingredients for these, plum tomatoes, white onion, jalapeno fresh, fresh lime juice, some cilantro if you like it, extra virgin olive oil, a neutral oil for frying. What do you like?
I love canola oil.
Okay.
Neutral flavor. If you want to shell out for a little grapeseed oil, really amazing smoking point. I'm a huge fan of that.
Okay, so we've got grated cheddar or Mexican cheese or a blend, some pickled jalapenos too, avocado, sour cream, or you could use Greek yogurt. And I want you to tell me how this comes together. Tell me about the frying first.
We bring up a pot of oil to about 350 degrees, and you really approach it just like you would fry most chips or most vegetable chips.
Can I jump in and ask you a question? Because I'm a little bit scared of frying, as Chris knows. You know, when people start mentioning temperatures and thermometers, I start to think, uh-oh, do I really have to get it to 350 degrees, Chris? Yes, I do, he says. Okay.
Yes.
Why?
350 is really important to prevent things from getting soggy and kind of oil-drenched.
Yep.
Too low, and things just absorb and become like a sponge of oil. Too high, obviously, they get way too dark, way too quick. So 350 is always that magical number for chefs, where things get golden brown, they dehydrate the right amount so that they stay nice and crispy, but they have a long enough time in the oil to really dehydrate that amount that needs to in order to really maintain that crisp over time.
So Chris is nodding his head.
I have two words, though. Fry daddy. Buy one of those tabletop fryers, and it's just it takes all the work out of frying. And some of them have tops on them now, to where they don't splatter.
We're going to come back to that in just a second. Okay, so you fry the nachos until they're golden, they're crispy. Out they come. How do you drain them?
out they come from the fryer. I have a little tray or a plate set up with a couple layers of paper towels on them. I try to lay them out so that they drain pretty well in those paper towels, and then salt them at this point. So you really want to do seasoning here to really wake them up.
How do you do your nachos? You do them in a cast iron skillet?
No, so these are actually, I'll lay them out in a sheet tray, lined with tin foil, and I spray with a little bit of Pam just to make life a little bit easier to get them off later. Before I started frying, I've already set my oven for about 400 degrees. I'm covering my matzo with all the cheese. I've already taken all those initial ingredients we listed, the tomatoes, the onions, the jalapeno, the lime juice, the cilantro, and I've mixed all that together and set it aside to sit for a pico de gallo topping. So,
yum.
Isn't this fabulous? Isn't it? By the way, this recipe and information about this cookbook is on our website, foodschmooze.org. I don't care what your heritage is, your culture, your religion, no matter what. Who doesn't want to have matzo nachos? This is just fabulous. So, and how long in the oven?
Just a few minutes. 5 minutes inside the oven until the cheese melts.
Yep.
Then we top it with all of the pico de gallo. We cut up the avocado, do a little diced avocado across it, a few dollops of sour cream or Greek yogurt. I personally love Greek yogurt. And then
me
the
too.
Kicker for me and a lot of these recipes in the book, we really wanted to bring in some fun techniques that people don't really think about when they think about Passover and matzah. I would challenge anybody to try to find a kosher Passover pickled jalapeno out in the not going to happen.
Yeah, we're gonna make this very popular for you. So David Kirchner, who is the recipe creator behind the book called Matzah, but Michelle Streit Heilbrunn is the author of the book and oversees the whole matzah empire. You've got 35 recipes in here for Passover, of course, but all year long, as you can see with these nachos. You can have them all the time. So matzah brei is something that I love. And if you don't know anything about this, we're talking about matzah crumbled up with smoked salmon and eggs, usually. But you've done something here, and Chris just made this. Chris, I want you to talk about how easy this was. You've done something which, to me, is like an inside-out bagel.
Totally easy. You just take the matzah and you run it under some water to, you know, soften them a little bit. You break them up into pieces, set it aside, and then you basically caramelize some onions, put a little butter in a pan, throw in your onions, cook them for 4 minutes or so until they get nice and caramelized. And then you whip some eggs, a little bit of salt and pepper, and then you throw that in on top of the caramelized onions. You throw in smoked salmon, a little bit of dill, some chives, and some capers. And then, and before you put the egg in, you
but
throw
hear
your...
that, capers.
Yeah, capers.
Capers go inside. Yeah. So this, you're starting to see where the inside-out bagel idea comes in.
Yeah. But the matzah goes in the egg, so it's actually coated with the egg and inside the omelet. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And what I found is I had it, I'm always worried about our gluten-free people. So we try things both ways with matzah in it and matzah not in it. So it because of the capers, it had a very quite salty feel. But when you put the matzah in, that completely desalinates it, right?
Absolutely. The matzah really is that foil that kind of brings all these elements together and lets them all kind of marry well. I would challenge your listeners, if they were gluten-free, a lot of the companies out there, including Streitz's, my partner on this book, do sell gluten-free matzah. And I won't say it'll work perfectly in every recipe in this book, but this recipe, especially when there's very quick soaking going on, it'll definitely work beautifully.
Good to know. See, we were wondering if there was gluten-free matzah on
really
the market.
Fantastic.
Not only is there, but you have it.
They do different kind of spelt flour matzahs. They're experimenting with a few others right now as well.
Wow. Cool. That's so good. All right. So this is David Kirchner, and this recipe, this matzah brei, is also Elio matzah brei, which everybody knows stands for, well, many people know, lox, eggs, and onions. I call this recipe the inside-out bagel. So this is on our website, too, and that's foodschmooze.org with information about the book, matzah.
It passed my test because I had two portions.
Yeah, it did.
And I never go back for a second helping, but today I did because it was so good.
Yeah. There were a couple things in here I wanted to talk about. In addition, I just don't want to run out of time, David, but you have this anytime brisket. And this is like turkey stuffing. on certain holidays, people have, you know, your own spaghetti sauce. People have family traditions and history. I'm always thinking, oh, what is everybody going to say? I'm not making anybody's brisket but Nana's brisket. And but you've got an anytime brisket here, and this is really innovative with matzah. You know, this is that Austrian Spätzle. So brisket, a little bit of oil again, garlic, bay leaves, thyme, tomato paste, red wine, chicken stock, whole carrots, extra virgin olive oil. And then how do you make the matzah spätzle?
Honestly, it is the easiest recipe in the world for something that feels so unique and different. I take about 2 cups of matzah cake meal. So this is the finer grind of matzah.
Where do you get that?
You can find it in most large supermarkets these days, especially around Passover time. If not, Amazon absolutely has it. You can even call up Stripes specifically and they'll ship it out to you.
Crown in West Hartford.
Yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite place. Okay, so you get the cake meal and you mix with eggs and salt and chicken stock. Homemade would be best.
Exactly.
But then nutmeg. That's interesting.
Yeah, a little bit of nutmeg.
You like that, Chris?
Definitely.
Chris's mother is Austrian, so
I'm always checking with him. Yeah, they use a lot of nutmeg in the stuff like this, definitely.
Okay, go ahead, David.
Yeah, that little bit of nutmeg, it made me almost think of gnocchi when you make that kind of Italian food as well. But we basically mix all that together. Then the technique comes in, which is the whole trick to this dish.
Yeah, this is the part I'm nervous about. Okay, because I look at your picture of what it turns out to be, and I think, now, how did he do that? So go ahead, tell me what to do.
So you take a large stock pot, fill it about 3/4 of the way with water, and we're talking, you know, 4 to 6 quart stock pot. Bring that water all the way up to a rolling boil over high heat, and then your mixture is going to be a pretty sticky, wet dough. And what you're doing is taking a colander with about, you know, maybe a half-inch sized holes on them, and you're putting this wet dough into the colander and using a rubber spatula and actually scraping it through the colander. So you get these little droplets of dough that are going to kind of fall from the colander into your boiling water.
That's it. Or you get a spätzle maker.
Or you get a spätzle maker.
And if you make it more than once a year, get a spätzle maker.
Really? Seriously?
Because it just takes all the work out of it. Yeah, it's a
colander with holes about, what did you say, half inch, did you say?
Between 1/4 to a half inch.
Okay, and then you just rubbing with the back of a spoon or a spatula, and of course it's pushing the dough through, and there you go. Okay.
My mom makes it on the edge of a cutting board, which is the old school method. So they make the dough a little heavier. So not so wet, and then with the back of a knife, she just flicks the little pieces into the boiling water.
It's pretty wild
to watch.
That is amazing. Well,
this
is a beautiful – I think that's – and this recipe also is on our website, foodschmooze.org, with information about this book, Matzah, 35 Recipes for Passover and All Year Long. Michelle Strait Heilbrunn is creator of the Matzah Empire. And David Kirchner, our guest, is the recipe creator who collaborates with her. And it's so fun to talk with you about this stuff. Let's move right straight to dessert. And Chris, I'm not forgetting that I want to hear about this deep fryer
that you were talking about
that you can buy. Takes all the work out of frying. Okay, desserts in your book, David. You did matzah chocolate chip cookies. And what makes them as good as regular flour-based chocolate chip cookies or better?
Oh, they're amazing.
With matzah?
So it's really this balance between the ingredients. So we're talking matzah cake meal, matzah meal, a little bit of baking soda that's inside of there as well, and then just that right amount of butter and sugar cream together.
Okay. So the texture, is there a graininess to the – because that's what I would imagine.
Because that's two different –
which
the grinds, right?
The matzah grinds.
Cake and matzah meal
and
are two different grinds.
I would
grinds.
Like that. So
absolutely.
Is that it?
I mean, you would think that there would be, but they just really blend together. And as they cook out, it's a drop cookie technique. It spreads out really beautifully on, you know, your silk pad or your baking it on your silicone pad and gets super crispy. The potato starch in there really acts to help it get that crunch.
You forget that's what's in matzah.
Super crispy.
Yeah.
Now, that's my idea of a chocolate chip cookie. I know
you
people
like
them
ones?
Soft. I just happen to be in the other camp. Yeah. And so this...
Well, these are...
Wow.
You're going to love these because it's that perfect balance. You get to the edge of the cookie, it's that crispy, snappy part, and the middle is just gooey and just gorgeous.
I'm kind of sold myself. David, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. David Kirchner is the recipe collaborator and creator behind this book, Matzah, 35 Recipes for Passover and All Year Long. Michelle Streit Heilbrunn of the Matzah Empire is the author of the book officially. And it's been a pleasure having you. And Chris, quickly, your fryer that you can buy is called a what?
The Fry Daddy. Everybody knows what a Fry Daddy is.
Now I'm
mortified. Now you know. Come on, you know.
I'm always learning on this show. So, okay. So a Fry Daddy, and it makes everything easy?
It's a tabletop plug-in fryer. Has a lid on it so you can store it.
I don't have to worry about temperature.
Again, if you fry more than once a year, you need to have one of these. They're like $25-$30.
Okay, I'm going for it. David, thank you. I'm going for you, too. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Check out the book and our website, foodschmooze.org. Thank you, Chris. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3, Saturdays at noon, weekdays. Listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. You know our slogan, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little more party in your life, we're here online at foodschmooze.org. And we hope you'll talk with us on Facebook. We're at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.